Get a free audiobook download of your choice when you sign up today. Log on to audiblepodcast.com/pottercast today for details.
Welcome, welcome to another...
The official podcast of The Leaky Cauldron.
The Leaky Cauldron.
The Leaky Cauldron.
You hear that, Ern? The Leaky Cauldron.
Just go! We're wasting time!
Welcome to Pottercast, your number one source for news, theories, discussion and interviews with people from the Potter books and films. I know a small amount myself, having written the books. My name is J.K. Rowling. I am now happy to introduce your hosts, Melissa, John and Sue.
Hey everybody, it's January, it's cold, Dennis Gustin has just dropped out of the presidential race, so there's no more Whomping Willow in the... In the Democratic primary, but fortunately for you, there's another episode of Pottercast.
Yay!
Yay!
I knew you'd make it timely, Paul. That was Paul the Durant, everybody.
You can't get any more timely.
You cannot. I said timely, and he managed to swing it into Harry Potter as well. Very nice.
It's,
very nice.
Barely.
It's raining outside.
It's raining.
It's the weather cast.
Dennis Gustin has dropped out of the presidential race, or will be dropping out of the presidential race, but in the meantime, you're listening to Pottercast 136, so that doesn't matter at all. Welcome, this is Melissa. I'm here with John and Sue and a very special guest this week, Paul DeGeorge of Harry and the Potter.
Hey guys, it's fun to be back. Thank you for having me again.
Woo! How long has it been? I can't even remember.
Well, it's about a year.
I was on a couple shows when we were touring together, I guess. So.
That's right.
The LA show, you were up on stage
that's
with
right.
us.
I had to take Sue's place. I was a Hufflepuff representative for the night.
And you did
it was
good,
good,
my friend.
Thank
you served at my house well.
Yeah.
I'm very proud, very
good
honored.
Woohoo! Do you know what happened in that show, by the way?
Well, lots of happened in that show.
What? That was the show where John unleashed his famous Knights of Hogwarts theory.
That's right.
That is right.
Good
stuff.
Well,
and that's when Cheryl said to me, Melissa, John should call me after he reads the book. She said, while we were reading the book, she texted me. I was like, okay, sure.
So,
welcome, Pottercast 136. We've got lots in store for you. But the first thing we're going to do is say hello again from our friends at audible.com.
It's my favorite part of the show.
I know it.
Get a free audiobook download of your choice when you sign up today. Log on to audiblepodcast.com/pottercast today for details.
Welcome back, welcome back. Middle of January, we've got big news, but...
Big news.
Well,
do we have big news?
Well, we do, and that's why Paul is here. He has just launched Wizard Rock EP of the Month Club, but we're not going to talk about it right now.
Oh!
Not right this second.
Oh,
first,
snap.
First, we're going to do other news, and then come back.
Okay.
Well, weather
Let's send
news.
It over to Sue.
Yeah. Weather news. Yeah.
Yay! Well, we already had weather news, but we do have filming news. It's set for Gloucester Cathedral is again... Where they device slums name.
Wait, Sue, I'm just gonna say right now, nobody email Sue, please.
Okay, how do you say it?
Because
Gloucester?
We all say things. Gloucester.
Gloucester? Okay. Filming is started for Gloucester Cathedral in England again for we think it's the student scenes for Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince. Last year we reported that students from King's School in the area had 174 students were going to be extras this time, and now they're going to about to start filming, and Hagrid's supposed to be there, and Molly, Julie Walters, who plays Molly, is supposed to be on set, as well as Dan Radcliffe and the trio, and so that's pretty exciting. So that should be happening as you guys are listening to this, so we should have more new pictures, hopefully soon.
So what scene in Half-Blood Prince would require them to be in that set, which is mostly an outside set, if I remember correctly?
How about the part where Ron gets poisoned?
No. That's really about three people.
I was wondering, though, because they used the one part of it for, like, the, you know, where, like, Dobby is free when he kicked my beloved Jason's butt, you know, and he flew.
Oh, that's a place?
Yeah.
Oh.
So I was wondering.
Yeah, so maybe Dumbledore's office.
Yeah, so maybe that's that.
You know?
Or maybe
so
it's for the
kids, you know what?
Funeral?
Quidditch.
Oh, Quidditch.
Quidditch.
What about Quidditch? Why Quidditch?
Because that's where you have a lot of kids.
Well.
What?
Yeah.
Where else, besides the Great Hall, do you usually see like 170 people in one room?
That's true, but why would they need to go to a castle to tape Quidditch scenes?
I don't know. Where are you going to put all those people?
They have, like, little stands and crap, right?
Yeah, but remember the shots? I don't know. I'm not working on the movies. What do you think it is if you're so sure it's not this?
I told you what it was. You guys?
It's not. Is there 170 people in the room when Ron gets poisoned?
Well, I mean, they make it a little more dramatic in the movie. It's Ron.
Maybe.
Sake, it's a big deal.
But it's also over Christmas when there are no students there.
Well, maybe it's like a dream sequence.
Oh, it's not over Christmas. It's just... No, it is over Christmas. I'm confused.
Yeah, I don't know.
Paul, what do you think?
I don't know.
I have no idea. Maybe they're writing new stuff, some new material. Maybe they got some new stuff from JK.
Oh, no.
Scenes, you know?
Yeah.
It's not particularly large.
Some B-roll material.
Yeah.
Maybe
Clovis
like
is back for this one.
Yeah, he's back, unfortunately. But unfortunately. Okay, Mr. Clovis is back, but you know, so it could be. I mean, obviously, it's the Great House. It could be just like between scenes. But I wondered if it had something to do with the funeral. You know,
I don't know if they're gonna do the funeral.
No, maybe so.
I'm not convinced.
Mm.
We haven't heard anything about it. I don't know.
It'd be kind of a bummer, and they're going to be all like, we don't want to make everybody all bummed out.
Right, at the end.
That's true.
You know?
I don't think the funeral's, like, that depressing. I think it's kind of like a nice closing to the book versus if Dumbledore just gets killed all of a sudden, like, whoa.
Dun, dun, dun.
But they do also have a big battle.
They can be dramatic.
Yeah,
exactly.
They don't call me coward. Oh, maybe it's the battle.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. It could be. You're right. They could be doing the battle scenes. Because of Bellatrix, as they said, they specifically said Helena Bonham Carter is going to be there. So that would make no sense. But,
oh, why else is she there? Right. That's when there's a lot. Maybe they're not going to do it when the kids are usually sleeping, but have it be like during a high traffic time of day. Or dinner time at least, where there's a lot of kids around to start it off.
That would be cool. That would be cool.
Huh.
Wow. Don't know. Let's see. In other news, Brendan Gleeson says he's not going to be back for Half-Blood Prince because obviously Mad-Eye really was absent during Half-Blood Prince. But he is going to be back for Deathly Hallows, which is good.
See, you know what that says? That says that they are doing what we've hoped to be doing with Deathly Hallows, having everybody come back. Everybody. Because there's really no need. I mean, you can do Deathly Hallows without Moody. He's not essential. Oh, no. I take it back. I lie. What am I talking about?
By the part where he just kind of died.
Oh, my God. For something in my head just snapped and made me think that he was there at the end, but he's so not.
It was the cold.
I take it back.
He's like a ghostly Jedi.
Well, I take it. Especially considering what we're discussing this week. Oh, I totally take it back. Wow. I clearly have not done podcasts in a while. Oh,
it's all good.
Yeah. But that's good, though, that if they do keep his thing, I mean, to have that impact of him, his character dying, I mean, that's important. That's important for the plot, I think. And, it's good that they're taking the time with that canon.
The Seven Potters.
Sue, is Hedwig on board? Is Hedwig on board for a seventh movie?
Well, we haven't confirmed it with her representatives, but I'm sure that we'll find that out.
Yeah.
I mean, she's so pivotal. With her mysterious death.
Have they used the same Hedwig for every movie so far?
I think there's actually a couple of them. I mean, I remember watching there was an ITV special on, like, the Making the Animal specials. And about the different animals. Cause
we
they have
the technology. We shall rebuild her.
There are. I think there's some of them that they've used.
The $10 million Hedwig.
Yes.
There's been a couple, at least. Met one of them once.
That'd be kind of an identity crisis.
But she's not a Muppet, you know? I mean, they don't, like, holler out, like, you know, like Grover.
Certainly.
Fozzie Bear. Do you think they're going to bother with it in Deathly Hallows?
Bother with exploding Hedwig? Are you serious?
Well, I'm just asking.
I think that's at least a $3 million effect. At least.
As long as they
you
want to
get all the feathers exploding properly.
$3 million shot.
Well, maybe, okay, plus the motorcycle, so, yeah. What I say, anyway. I'm the authority on these things.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah, well, maybe you can do that shot, John. We'll look for you for, like, secret messages and these feathers exploding on the
tortured screen. Element of Harry trying to, or deciding to blow up his owl, supposedly.
Yeah, well, I mean, how I've heard they're talking about doing it, though, is they're actually going to slow time down.
Yeah.
And just kind of, you can, like, feel just, you hear his breathing and his heart beating, and then you see Hedwig, and she's falling, and you zoom in on her eye, and she's crying.
Yeah.
And then Harry fires the spell, and it hits her, and then everything explodes, and everything zooms back into full speed, and everybody's just pandemonium, because everybody saw it, and they're just totally freaking out.
You're making that up.
That's the gossip I've heard.
Yeah.
In the forums.
Actually, I heard they were...
Crying Hedwig?
They were thinking about inviting John to direct. Is that true? Can you talk about that, John?
You know, there are some forums that would say that very same thing, so... You don't know what to believe these days.
There are indeed forums for everything.
Yep.
Okay.
Now, rumors. Speaking of rumors, well, although actually it was a little bit more than a rumor, we heard the first of an actual opening date for the Wizarding World of Harry Potter at Orlando. That the president of Universal Orlando said December 1st.
Hey.
Of
2009, which is, yes.
That's excellent.
I was very surprised by that.
Wow.
Rock.
We shall see.
Think so. I mean, you know, opening right before Christmas, we had talked about those rumors before about, you know, what they were going to do and have the Hogwarts decorated and have it all festive and carolers singing and stuff. So that
would be a brilliant way to open it.
Oh, can you imagine, though? I mean, it's already, I mean, would they have the bowl games at the end of the month in Florida, you know,
yeah.
In Orlando? But I just think that trying to get down there for that would be wild.
I'm not going to have to worry about it.
Shut up, you. You're going to be a regular guy.
I don't know where I'm going to be living by then, though.
They're going to wink and let you through the gates when they see you coming.
Oh, are you kidding me? I'm a face character over there already. They already hired me for the dollish role.
Oh, God.
I just have to do my costume fitting.
I got to tell you something, though.
So,
you do have some, like, similar traits to Richard Leaf.
How's that?
Your eyes.
My new haircut? My eyes?
Yeah, you guys both got kind of, like, large eyes. It's true. Somebody should do, like, a face comparison, like one of those morph things.
I'm a little more muscular.
Okay, John.
Yeah. Build up your muscles to fight off that old woman with the dead bird on her head beating you up.
We've been through this.
Too many times. Okay, what else is happening?
Okay, one last thing. Dan Radcliffe has given a new interview where he talks about the new role that he's taking about the late photojournalist Dan Eldon. It's called Journey. And if you don't know the story about Dan Eldon, he was a young photographer who was unfortunately terribly murdered in Somalia when he and some other colleagues were there covering a story. I believe it was a bombing. And anyhow, it's a very moving story. And this young man had done some really brilliant photography and really exposed a lot of the world to what was happening in Somalia at that time. And Dan is going to take on that role, but he just wanted to confirm that he is doing it, but it's not going to be happening any really soon. So we were talking before about when he was going to try and get the filming in with him coming to Equus in the fall and stuff. So, but he's looking forward to it, and he's very excited about doing
Excellent.
It.
I'm always excited to see him in new roles. I just saw that there's a DVD out for December Boys. I just saw it in the store this week.
Yeah.
We have that available in our shop.
Thanks, Sue. Is the shop online, by the way?
Can we get to the shop?
Did it fix itself yet?
Last time I checked, we could not, but hopefully by the time...
Sorry, guys, my spam filter sort of... Oh, it's back! It's up!
It's on! Yay!
My spam filter kind of went berserk and didn't tell me that the domain name for thecauldronshop.com was expiring. So Sue sent a panic email this morning saying, the shop is gone!
Man, we were so close. We were days away for somebody to, like, to squat that into, like, a slash site or something.
Nice.
That would have been awesome.
Well... Okay. With all that behind us, I think it's time for us to talk to our friend Paul DeGeorge.
Yay, Paul.
Thanks.
Because he, as for those that need reminding, Paul DeGeorge is one half of Harry and the Potters, the wizard rock band that started it all in wizard rock, which has now become so, so huge. It's everywhere you look. You're MTV, Rolling Stone. Have you guys been to Rolling Stone?
I think we're on rollingstone.com. There you go.
Whoa.
Something like that.
Oh, cool.
I don't much care about those, but they've been on
a
Trivial Pursuit card.
Hey, yeah, there you go. Swedish Trivial Pursuit. Swedish edition.
The Swedish Trivial Pursuit.
Explain about this. tell us the story.
Not too much of a story besides I got an email from a fan of ours in Sweden, and it had this attachment, which was a photograph of a Trivial Pursuit card that she said, you know, she had been playing with her family over the holidays, and they pulled out this card, and it had a question, which translated read, what do brothers Paul and Joe DeGeorge call themselves when they rock out? And the answer is Harry and the Potters. And this, yeah, wow. I'm not even kidding.
Yeah, who the hell?
Swedish Trivial Pursuit, yeah.
Seriously.
And so
did you know? Did you know you have fan base in Sweden?
The question doesn't even have any hints, you know? It's just like assuming Joe and I are household names in Sweden, which is, I think, probably
so
rather
awesome.
Absurd. But,
that's so awesome, though. God,
did you
I
know
even imagine
that you had an audience there?
You know, I guess so. I actually, you know, I posted. I guess we do. I did post a blog about it on our MySpace, and it got hit with like 7 or 8 comments from people in Sweden who were like, "Yeah, you got to come tour." So, you know, they're pretty up on pop culture in Sweden. And hello to our Swedish fans of Pottercast. Thank you for joining us.
We have dozens, certainly.
Dozens.
At least a dozen. No, they're definitely...
That is way
cool. Yeah, they're
cool.
Definitely...
But you and ABBA, that is way cool. I love it.
Just don't wear the bell bottoms.
ABBA's actually from Sweden, so I don't know that we have anything on them. But
yeah.
Well, do they have anything on you?
Right.
That's what I'm... That's what
no,
about, yeah.
And there you go.
Okay. Anyway, Harry and the Potters,
yes.
the source of all the craziness, sweeping the everything. And they also are very committed to charitable and activist efforts, the latest of which is the second incarnation of the Wizard Rock EP of the Month Club, which has just opened itself up for new subscriptions.
Yeah. Thanks, Melissa.
Yeah.
Melissa is actually one of our subscribers.
I am.
And
did I resubscribe yet? I forgot.
I'm not totally sure. We got a whole lot of resubscriptions, so it's good.
Nice.
Things are going well.
How many resubscriptions have you got already?
I think right now we are probably around 250 subscriptions. Some of those are new. Some of those are resubscribers, obviously. The majority.
How many are you offering in total?
Well, we're still unsure of that, but we're hoping to offer at least 1,000 subscriptions. That's going to be our goal. So if we hit that, we're going to raise probably in excess of like $25,000 this year in 2008. The whole idea behind – maybe I should talk about this a little more. But the whole idea behind the EP Club is we've got 12 Wizard Rock bands, one for each month of 2008. And over the course of the year, subscribers to the club will be sent CDs. You know, usually they're between 5 and 10 songs or so. It's kind of at the discretion of the bands. But, you know, it's up to them what they want to put on. But pretty much everything that they contribute is exclusive material that's really only available on these CDs that are being mailed out to subscribers. And each band gets maybe about 200 copies of the CD, and they can sell those at shows. But otherwise, the only way you're going to hear most of this music is by subscribing to the club. And the subscription price is $60 in the U.S. and Canada, and $75 worldwide. And those subscription dues go to cover all the pressing costs of reproducing the CDs and all the mailing expenses and distribution. And then beyond that, we're donating all of the proceeds to 2 different charitable organizations this year. One is First Book, which is a national nonprofit organization that is aimed at giving new books to children in low-income families. And encouraging early literacy. And the other organization is our near and dear Harry Potter Alliance, which was just recently recognized by J.K. Rowling herself. I don't know if you guys got to talk about that on here, but it was pretty awesome of her to say such wonderful things about the Harry Potter Alliance recently.
Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah, what was so cool about that is that I think we talked about it a little bit. What was so great about that is that in the past, it's always been a website, a fan site, a site devoted to just celebrating the books. But by endorsing the Harry Potter Alliance, which she's essentially done, it's not just a website. It's a movement. It's an activist group. It's a statement about the world, and it's it's more than one would ever think was required of her to recognize in a fan, because there's, you know, there's implications. It's saying that she's in full support of their efforts, which is awesome. It's just awesome.
Yeah.
And we're, yeah.
And I think, you know, everybody who's a part of the Harry Potter Alliance, you know, not just Andrew and all of us others, you know, everybody worldwide can kind of be proud of that, because I think it's a recognition of all the really great stuff that the Harry Potter Alliance is doing, and all the stuff that's to come, really, because she just kind of opened the doors up. And I know ever since she made those quotes and announced the Fansite Award, you know, Andrew Slack, who runs the HP Alliance, he's just totally energized, and so is everybody else who's on the board of directors, and we're just so pumped to continue all the work that we've been doing in 2008. And so that's why we're adding them to the mix of the beneficiaries of the EP Club.
Yeah, because Andrew has certainly proven over the past couple of years that that he is pure of spirit and pure of intent. And so we've been so excited. The flurry of activity around the Alliance right now, I can say, is just amazing and inspiring. And the changes that are coming to it, we'll announce on Leaky as well, but keep an eye out, because there's some good things coming.
And makes me want to throw my shirt off.
Stop.
What?
John's referring to... Oh, God. The explanation is required, John.
I don't know what's going on.
Andrew had some fun at my party last week.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I think
I was
Andrew,
so happy.
Andrew just loves to party hard, dances hard. He's got to get that shirt off. Can't be restricted.
It's such an un-Andrew Slack-like thing to do that I would turn around and I was in complete shock. So, okay. Can we move on?
Yeah.
With the Rock AP of the Month Club, tell us about the new bands. How is this year's batch of musicians different than last?
All right. Well, last year we had 12 bands, obviously. And I do want to say thank you to all of those bands who participated, because you know, none of this is possible without those guys and gals all producing some really excellent music and all basically kind of giving it away through the EP Club, you know, to subscribers. The bands, outside of getting a couple hundred copies of their CD, didn't get any money. So kudos to them, because we did raise $13,000 for First Book in the 2007 edition, which was sold out. So we're hoping to go above and beyond that this year, offering a few more subscriptions and hopefully get a few more people on board and raise quite a bit more money. The bands this year, we got a whole different bunch. Although Harry and the Potters, we're gonna hang on as sort of the flagship band of the EP Club here.
Yay!
So we'll be offering up a CD at some point over the summer to members of the club, and we've also got the Whomping Willow or Whomping Willows, the Dennis Kucinich of the Wizarding World.
That's right.
What is it all about?
Matt is a very Matt Giacomo, who's the Whopping Willow, is not afraid to say whatever.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Oh right. Okay, I get it.
Say.
No, that makes
sense.
I love Matt.
And I love Matt Dilley. Matt is actually helping out this year with the club. But him and I kind of are organizing it, getting things together, helping the bands get their stuff together. And I guess the other bands we have involved, we've got Catch Love, we've got Gret and Forge.
I love those guys.
You may recognize those names from the incredibly successful Jingle Spells compilation. Thank you, guys.
Oh,
yeah.
Yes.
Good stuff there. who else do we got?
It's
you
on
got,
that link.
You got the Mudbloods, one of my favorite new groups.
We do have
like
the Mudbloods. Yes, thank we've you. Got the Nifflers from Canada, our first Canadian representatives.
Nice.
Cool.
So hopefully they'll bring in some subscribers from the Great White North. Yes.
Beauty.
We got some hosers. Hosers going to be subscribed to the club.
No. Take off, man.
He's reminding me of the tour from last year.
I love Doug and Bob.
They're heroes to me. We've even got this is our first band, or no, actually not our first band. We last year's club had a band from the Netherlands. This year we've got a band from France. The legendary Basilisk in Your Pasta will be
okay.
Nice.
Okay, explain that name. What is the deal with that name?
You know, I think things are just a little different in France. I don't exactly know what's going on with that name.
That's so
I don't know about putting snakes in your noodles. That's not cool to me, I don't think.
But
I never thought of having a basilisk in my pasta.
They definitely are. They've got like a good environmentalist message. They have like one song. Their big hit is called Voldemort, Peace Off. And, you know, it's got a refrain that suggests we all save the planet. So they're definitely environmentalists. Nice. And actually, so we've got a big environmentalist kick on this one. We've got the giant squid Stravaganza. He's very heavy on pro-environmentalist things, almost an extremist. Same with Big Wompy. He's definitely follows the environmentalist theme. And actually, this year I'm happy to announce that I think we're going to be printing our stuff on 100% post-consumer recycled cardboard as well, with non-petroleum-based things.
Nice.
Oh, yeah, bring it on.
Nice. That is cool, actually. That is very good.
Backing it up.
Joe would be proud.
Backing it up. So these bands, I mean, how are their sounds different than what we're usually used to? Because this is not the normal assemblage of bands you usually get with a Wizard Rock lineup.
Well, you know, as Matt and I were thinking about it, we were just trying to, like, pick out a lot of bands who, honestly, like, it has as much to do with, like, personal politics as it does with sound, you know? Like, we wanted people who we thought would be a good fit with, like, the ideology behind the club, you know, raising money for this charity and things like that. So people like, you know, Bread and Forge, this guy Jared, he's just released his first record, and I think I can't remember which charity, but I think he's donating all the proceeds of that to a charity. I can't remember offhand, but, you know, people like that. Jace from Catch Love is a huge Darfur activist, and so these are the kind of people we find ourselves more interested in working with. But also, at the same time, loving their music as well. You know, it's kind of like, well, who do we want to work with? Whose music do we love? And those are the kind of, like, the ideas behind who we're asking to be part of this. But the music is really all over the map. The Whomping Willows promised to do his EP. Well, he's actually going to release it as Big Wompy. So it's going to be a bunch of hip-hop cuts.
Oh,
hip-hop
cool.
Cuts from the Wompster.
Oh, dear God.
Excellent.
Yeah.
It's so good.
And
I think this is the year for hip-hop Wizard Rock, to be honest.
Oh, yeah.
I have a feeling. I don't know why.
Oh, yeah. It's coming.
Well, it's a new form of it. Why not? That's cool. You have a Hufflepuff in the group, too. Don't forget Justin
Finch-Fletchley. Absolutely. You know, Justin's representing the Hufflepuffs and pizza. He loves pizza.
That's right.
You know, I saw Tom Riddle and Friends perform last year, and they are just so funny.
Yeah, we've got a lot of really hilarious bands on here. Tom Riddle and Friends are, the way Matt described them when we were discussing it, he's like, imagine if, like, Ben Stiller and Owen Wilson had a band or something, you know?
That's exactly it! Oh my God! That's it!
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're awesome. They're a great bunch of guys. Super nice.
And Gret and Forge, we know from the Jingle Spells, made that awesome rendition of 12 Days of Wizard Christmas, which if you look on iTunes where Jingle Spells is still available, if you haven't, you know, if you haven't gotten it, they have that little bar. I know you guys hate rankings, but they have that little bar on iTunes that says like how popular a certain song downloaded is. And Greta Forge is like way, way out there in the lead. It's really funny.
Well, it's a testament of that song. They did a great job, and they actually made that song cool. That song totally sucks. The 12 Days of Christmas.
You're right.
It's a pain to listen to.
Thank you. That's our first year doing Christmas songs. John specifically banned people from making 12 Days of Christmas.
I know.
Yeah.
He did.
Yeah, did. But they did a good job.
Yeah.
I just don't like crappy renditions of it because it's so annoying because it takes so long.
Yeah, the surprising thing is it's only like 4 minutes, but it just feels like it's forever.
Yeah, forever.
Yeah, totally. There's this stupid car company that did, like, a jingle to it, and it lasted, like, oh, my God, commercials don't need to be this long for cars. And they did the whole 12 Days of Christmas.
Because it's about 30 seconds of new lyrics, and the rest of it is just recycled, you know? But they made it so fun and rocky and awesome, so I'm looking forward to seeing what they bring to the EP club.
Yeah, he actually, Jared just sent me his record, and it's fantastic. It's definitely one of my favorite Wizard Rock CDs, you know? So really, really excited that Gred and Forge will be contributing. And it's got a bunch of other cool stuff, too. The Gryffindor Common Room Rejects, they're actually from... down in your area of Florida, maybe not the area of Florida, but they're from Florida anyway, John.
That's awesome.
Representing the Sunshine State. they're kind of like these two awesome high school girls who are just like bashing out like these pop songs on a Casio keyboard. And honestly, like they kind of remind me of the stuff Joe and I used to do like when we were goofing around. So it's cool to have them on board. Sure.
We'll be. Hey, are we going to hear any Book 7 songs from you guys and put you right on the spot?
Gosh, yeah. Well, bring it on. Joe and I don't have a real regular practice schedule with him in college and me living in New York right now. But once we get into the swing of things after he's out of school, I think we'll be maybe doing some writing and some rehearsing. So maybe while we're on tour this summer, we'll be performing some new stuff. We've been talking back and forth about doing some, like, big, huge metal opus to go with the Battle of Hogwarts, you know.
nice! Awesome!
Shredding. But, you know, maybe we can pop.
You know you are.
Oh, no, but that would be cool, like a Stairway to Heaven thing. That would be so cool.
Totally.
That would be
really
cool.
Yeah, we're
going
to go epic. Yeah. If we go there, we're going there epically.
You need to go there. It's Book 7. You need to go there.
Definitely doing one about the ice cream man.
He's dead. Did you hear?
By the way, guys, thank you for throwing that question out at Joe. That ruled. I've been wondering about that since day one.
Very welcome. But I've been curious, too. And actually, we talked about this the day after, I remember. What the heck happened to Florian?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
He's dead. But I want to know his backstory. I'm requesting that. I'm sure it will go into the Scottish book.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe,
which I love that's what everybody's calling it now.
Maybe that's what all those little kids are for. They were going to get ice cream and, like, there was some ruckus.
That could be a foreshadowing of the doom to come.
That's mean. Okay, well, EP of the Month Club, wizardrockclub.com. You can find all your subscription links there, and we'll have more updates for you as the weeks go on. Paul's also going to get us some fun commercials with previews of the music, am I right?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I just got one in the mail. I haven't even listened to it yet, but I'm going to pump you guys with promo spots so that all your listeners will be bludgeoned week after week and suggested that they sign up and spend their money wisely. Bludgeon. Seriously, $60... I know it sounds like a lot, but when it comes down to it, you're getting 12 CDs, so it's like $5 a CD, and I think that's a pretty sweet deal.
Yeah.
And these come over the course of the year, you know, like the first mailing is going to be in April, and then another one in June. So over the course of the year, you're going to be just constantly, your mailbox will be feeding you, this time, Wizard Rock.
Like a basilisk in your pasta.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yummy.
Thanks, Paul. Paul's going to stick around with us and talk about Deathly Hallows and Order of the Phoenix film. So with that, why don't we move right over into what, Bit by Bit?
I believe so.
Okay. Bit by Bit. Ooh. Number something.
We haven't done this in a while.
No.
We're back. Getting back into it.
Well, if you've read the book, you should be all
Paul,
right.
Paul, have you read the book?
I have read this book.
Is it possible ever that a Wizard Rock fan has not read the seventh book?
It's
possible. Scandal. Anything's possible.
Not advisable. Okay, so, book 7. What are we talking about this week, guys?
We are on chapter 6.
All of it?
We finished chapter 5.
Yes.
But we got a big chapter 6, so we're splitting it in two. We got the first half of chapter 6 today.
Which is called the Ghoul in Pajamas.
But are we going to get to the Ghoul in Pajamas or no?
No,
absolutely
not, sadly.
We
should tell people that for those who are following along at home. They're little books.
Yeah.
Okay, so basically what's just happened in last week, we got up to the part where Moody dies, sad Moody.
Yes.
Which I knew. I'm still so mortified that I forgot that. Oh, my brain. All right, so Bill and Flora are going to get married and everybody's in a tizzy, getting things ready. Molly's being a little off color, and I have to say, a friend of mine pointed this out to me when the book, after the book had come out, and she had a point. Did it feel to any of you as though in the beginning of this chapter, Molly's actions were starting to be set up like a red herring, like she was perhaps imperious, or she was an imposter, or she was not the Molly we've come to know and love, and not just because of stress?
It felt a lot like the Molly we know and love to me, just on a hyper-annoyance level.
I can totally see that, like, where you're like, Molly's kind of acting weird, and kinda, everybody should sort of be on their guard about that at this point. I can see that, definitely.
Yeah. There's some point where she forgets whose socks she's rolling up, and then she forgets that Hermione and Ginny have already changed the sheets. Like, it's a very, this is, when it comes to home stuff, that's not Molly, you know?
Yeah, but for me, I understood that, because she's so worried about her children. I mean, here is someone, a colleague, a man that she's known for a long time, Mad-Eye Moody, has died, and, you know, and here she's worried about her own children, and then she knows, in the meantime, her son, her beloved Ron, is going to go off on this mystery mission with this child, Harry, that she's come to love as her own, and Hermione, too, and I just think... So for me, I understood it. I just kind of, I mean, that just seems like natural things. Sometimes when you get all hyper and you're worried about stuff, you kind of actually forget. Sometimes you go into over hyperdrive, like I do, like when I get like stressed or whatever, I just want to do things. I like to work. I just want to post news. I want to clean the drawers. I want to do that. I understand that, but at the same time, you get so involved and you just kind of forget. So for me, I understood. But yeah, I guess a good point. I never really actually thought of it like that. But,
yeah,
you know?
Once you pointed it out to me, I said, you know, that's a perfect way to hide a red herring, because it's totally explainable either way. Either she's just so stressed out. Later on, say it had turned out that Molly was an imposter, we could have looked back on that on these scenes and been like, yeah, obviously, you know?
Yeah. Right.
But I love the little sneak attack they try to accomplish on Harry.
Yeah. One of the things I enjoyed, though, about this chapter, I have to say, for me, it was kind of comforting in the same fact, after we'd just gone through this terrible thing, was that here we are at the Burrow. I love the Burrow, and I could just, you know, it was so visualized, I thought, really well in the first movie. But here it is in this, you know, you're talking about de-gnoming. I love that little, that's my favorite parts of the video games, actually, when they had to clean out the gnomes out of the garden. But
that's hard.
Yeah, I'm just
And but then you just see that kind of normal kind of family life there. You know, they're cleaning the cutlery and just, you know, I mean, if you've ever been part of any, like, whether it's a wedding or any, like, you know, reunion or getting ready for the holiday, I mean, you know, but all mothers are like, okay, this house must be cleaned.
You should see my mother.
Yeah. You know, John, did you ever have to do any cleaning? Paul, anyone?
No, the only boy in the family of girls, I never had to do anything.
Oh, my goodness. You didn't just say that.
That was very sarcastic. I had to do every effing chore.
Paul, I met your mom, and I think she's so sweet and mild-mannered, but I have a feeling that when it came to an important event, she would have you guys running around like crazy.
Oh, yeah. There's always, like, every time we have Christmas dinner or something, there's everyone in the family spends all day cooking, you know. I think we had 11 pies at Thanksgiving. Everybody made, like, 3 pies each, you know.
Oh, jeez.
There was actually 9 people at dinner, and there were 11 pies.
That's awesome.
we needed to make extra for when the pies ran out, like 2 days later. We wanted to have some extras on hand. So we made doubles of all the favorites.
That
triple
even
pumpkin.
A little different.
Triple pumpkin, 2 banana creams.
Sweet.
A couple apples, maybe. A lot of differences.
Mm.
1 mincemeat. Oh. That got bonus points in the pie-eating contest. 1, because it's heavy. 2, because it's gross.
Wow.
Ew.
I can never have another meat pie after watching Sweeney Todd at all.
It's actually not meat. Yeah. It's just candied fruits.
Yeah, that's...
The name's misleading.
Yeah, it is.
I've never had it, I guess. I wouldn't
try the fruit. I never knew. Yeah. The people,
bunch of raisins.
English people had to tell me.
Jelly and stuff.
And it's gross.
Yeah, that's okay.
Yeah.
You're alienating a whole country now, though.
No offense, England, but, you know.
Your food sucks.
I feel like putting ham in a fruitcake.
I think the fact of English food not being the best in the world is not a new phenomenon.
Yeah.
It looks pretty good at Hogwarts.
Well, that's Hogwarts. Come on. They got magic cooking. They got house elves cooking.
Happily
and joyfully cooking.
Oh, Jesus.
Yes.
All right, so... All right, they're getting ready.
Mm-hmm.
Molly and Arthur start to kind of sidle up and say, oh, they have this crazy impression that you're going off and not going to school and going to go, you know, hunt the Horcruxes. And Harry's like, aha, knew that was coming.
Yeah.
This is so, you know, like stealthy order members.
It is.
It is. The 17-year-old can see right through your plans.
Yeah. You know, and it's true. It's also kind of like a parent thing too. I mean, come on. You know, I mean, there are times when our parents.
Well, look how excited she got when they were made prefects.
Yeah, yeah.
What does that have
It's natural to think that she'd be just as equally disappointed if she isn't going to go into school.
It's not about school. This is Molly's. I mean,
yeah.
Yeah, she might prefer that they went to school and got a degree, but if they didn't go to school and stayed home, she would be fine with that.
Well, she said, may I ask why you are abandoning your education?
That's an excuse.
Yeah, sure it is. Yeah.
Abandoning your education. That's what you say. She wants them not dead. Doesn't care if they have a degree.
Right.
You know?
But she did like a tact I could just remember my mother doing. Oh, okay. And then turning that suddenly sweet, you know, like she dropped it all of a sudden and then blammo, she like piled on all the work for him, you know? It's like, oh, I'm going to get you one. If I can't get you one way, I'm going to get you another, you know? Just kind of a mom thing to do. Well, it's true, they do. I mean, it's just, yeah.
I know it's true. It's lame what happened.
But then we got a little hint, though, didn't we, about Harry and Ginny were alone. For just a moment, I was, like, so hopeful.
Yeah, for serious.
You know?
That doesn't happen until later.
I know, but, you know.
Yeah, when did that happen? I don't know.
A little, Dylan's birthday. It's his birthday gift.
That's right.
You know that Harry, what's kind of surprised me is that I always thought that what Umbridge did to him in fifth year would be, at least enchanted so that it would fade. But I can't believe that there's still a reminder.
Well, that's
all
right.
These years later that I Must Tell Lies will be forever embedded in the skin on Harry's.
Scarred for life.
You would have invented something like that.
Scarred for life. You love that.
I'm trying to get you. Got to name your book that, Melissa. It's gold.
Not called Scarred for Life.
Scarred for Life and Loving It.
Scarred for Life and Loving It, yeah. That's what he wants me to name my book, guys. That's your EP.
Whatever, I'll let you borrow it.
Subtle.
10%.
No deal. Okay. No, but it's you know, has nobody, like, looked at his hands and said, this woman should be in prison? Like, I know we're in the middle of a war, but surely somebody would look at this and say, okay, that's proof that she's going to be in
prison. Yeah, it's got to be a dark utensil.
Yeah.
A dark utensil?
Yeah.
Like a dark kitchen fork?
Yes, there's dark pencil sharpeners as well.
What?
Make the pencils unbearably sharp.
What are you talking about?
You got to watch out for those.
John?
Okay, the part that there was a couple things that, you know, we got an explanation about the Secret Keeper thing, which I know that we had talked about in our fandom forever.
It's confusing.
Yeah, pretty much. And then now suddenly, and then
wait, let's talk about this.
Okay, good. Go
ahead. Okay. The explanation in the book of the Secret Keeper thing is that when you die, everybody who you told the secret to also becomes a secret keeper. Everybody cried foul, said that went against what was on J.K. Rowling's site, but J.K. Rowling's site said that if a secret keeper dies, the secret dies with that person, if you haven't told anyone. But if you have told somebody the secret before you die, then everybody becomes a secret keeper.
Right.
So, yes. So, but, okay, so does that mean that Voldemort was a secret keeper for the Potters in 1981?
That's a good question.
Because the Potters told Pettigrew.
And then Pettigrew told Voldemort.
And then Pettigrew told Voldemort. So those two people become secret keepers.
Well, the secret was over, though, wasn't it?
No.
I mean,
what was the secret?
Pettigrew was the secret keeper.
Right. And then he told Voldemort.
He didn't die till the seventh book.
So the secret,
yeah, but the whole secret keeping that the secret that they were keeping to begin with was where James and Lily were at.
It's where they were hiding. So I have to
ask. They died, and then the secret's over, right?
I guess it's confusing because
I guess once Pettigrew died. No. It's the secret keeper who has to die. So James and Lily have no bearing on that.
But then how come, we're getting into a canon conundrum. The explanation of Secret Keeper was that in book three, was that Voldemort could be standing right outside their window and still not see them in there. So how do people find them?
I was just saying that even Wormtail wasn't a Secret Keeper anymore. If the whole point of the Fidelius charm was extinguished by the secret is this is where they're hiding, but now they're dead, so they're not hiding there anymore. So the Fidelius essentially dissolved. So no one's a Secret Keeper anymore.
I guess that could explain it, but it's still a very tricky area of canon.
Yeah.
So we're back in the Burrow, and Hermione is making a giant stack of books.
Yes. God bless her. She's something. I love her.
Sifting books.
Well, they're all getting ready because they've got their mindset on helping out Harry, and Harry isn't ready to accept it right away.
But it's only Hermione that's doing this.
Yeah.
Just her.
Well, you know, Ron would like you to think he's helping.
No, Ron has no idea. When they leave, when they get onto Tottenham Court Road, Ron has no idea that Hermione's bag has been enchanted to Harry everything, that she's been ready for this forever, that she just grabbed them and ran.
Yeah.
Her little Mary Poppins bag.
Yeah, pretty much. But it's so funny that I loved how Joe put in all those books that we heard through the entire series. There they were. There was Hermione in her Hermione-ness, you know.
She's ready to go.
You know? Yeah.
I wonder if she had the Monster Book of Monsters in there with her, too.
I think they mention that, don't they?
Just in case.
Well, they do. Yeah, right, Paul. You're right, Paul, because doesn't it bite Ron?
Yeah, it's right here. She had dropped the Monster Book of Monsters on his foot.
They're
just trying to decide which ones to take with us, and then Ron, of course, thinks she's being crazy. We're not taking all these books with us. And he underestimated her, you know.
That
would have been a really heavy bag if there wasn't enchantments on that thing.
Yeah, but
it's not how you want to go hiding.
But see, I liked this part, though, because when I was reading this part, and then with a great creaking of rusty bed springs, Ron bounded off the bed and got there first with his arm around Hermione. I was like, yes, he's finally, like, trying to be affectionate and caring for Hermione. I was like, oh, my God, finally it's going to start happening here. I was
in that hilarious cardboard way that he's been instructed to do so with that book.
Oh, that's right, that a book.
You know?
That's right.
Like, oh, the book says I should go comfort her now.
Yes.
I'm going to comfort her now.
Yeah.
You know? It's so charming to see him bumbling over himself.
It is, you know. But for those that have been waiting for this romance, it's like, come on, finally.
Okay, so where we're leaving off with this chapter is that Ron is deciding to tell everybody he's got Spattergroit.
Yes.
And the ghoul is on it. And when we pick up next week, we'll start talking about Horcruxes and the ghoul and all the rest of this beautiful chapter.
Wow.
It was a pretty cool chapter, and lots of anticipation, I think. Lots of build-up.
So, too.
Took a little while, but we got there.
And now we're back with Phoenix Files. For this part, we're still talking about the Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix movie. Now, for those of you who are at home, who might have been at home, finally got your DVD and have finally just seen it for the first time, or just now seen it for the first time, I should say. Here we go. So we're taking it apart. We're looking at it a little segment by segment, too.
Yeah, there were some comments of people thinking that we wouldn't be doing this anymore because we've done the commissary. Nah, we always have stuff to say.
Yes.
Yeah.
So much to talk about.
I didn't even think about that. That's true. We could have enacted all the Phoenix Files simultaneously, back to back. Except that we'd have to pause, and then it would be a big pain in the butt.
Yeah. It's more fun this way.
Paul,
nobody would ever be able to follow.
Paul, what's your you're gonna join us for?
Am I supposed to watch along with this?
No, we're not watching. We're just
go ahead and tune up. 39:16. Pause. Let me know when you're ready.
Bob.
I don't even have the DVD. What am I going to do? Is that on YouTube?
That'd be handy if we could give them the time code to where we are in this book.
Yeah, that'd be great.
That would be wholly unnecessary because people remember what the hell is in this movie.
Okay, so Sue, remind us what we're talking about this week on the Phoenix Files.
We're talking about, well, we've just seen Sirius Black, who is not a blob in this movie like he was in the fireplace in the last movie, but now he's actually a floating head. He pops up and the trio's in the common room, if you remember, and suddenly Sirius is there and they have their little chat with Mr. Sirius Black. We've just come from detention. mentioned with Dolores, and Hermione's all concerned about his hand, and then suddenly, poof, there's an actual Gary Oldman. And they talk about that, and they go from there. Right, Ron? John? Ron? John?
Yeah.
Yep.
Ron, John.
I gotta say, just the effects alone, just from like a fan, you know, film fan, I just was like shocked at the difference between, you know, how they had that molten blob from the last movie and now.
I'm almost surprised that they updated it. Because that's kind of like a concession on their part, saying, okay, we did it kind of stupid last time, so here's a better try.
Well, good for them.
Yeah.
More people should do
definitely
that.
Definitely. A big round of applause for that, because I wouldn't... Usually, you'd think that they would stick with it, they commit to it, that's how it is. Because it now requires re-explaining it, maybe a little bit, like, what's this thing? This is different than last time.
Yeah, and...
It looked a lot better.
And in terms of the plot, they're realizing, you know, Umbridge is really cracking down, that they're just not beginning to get what the help that they need, right? They're just not going to get any learning, any sort of tutorage from her, other than torture, I guess.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, it was mostly, or not mostly, but partially influenced by that conversation that Hermione, I guess, in the movie mostly decides that, you know, we need a teacher, a proper one. And they start talking about the DA.
We are the DA. Oh, sorry. Wrong rock group.
Who's breaking into Wizard Rock in the middle?
Sorry.
Oh, it's nice.
I wrote a song about that, too. Whatever.
You did? I can't remember.
You did. Sing it for us, Paul. Acapella.
Come on, Paul. Quick.
He was like, you know, we're Dumbledore's army. Don't mess with us. Something like that.
Yo. There you go.
You know what I've been listening to.
It was inspiring. It kind of, you know, inspired a, you know, generation of wizard rockers.
I've been listening to your first album, and on there, there's a song that goes, These Days Are Dark.
Yeah.
It's like one of my favorite.
Yeah. That's a good one.
A Book 5 song.
You love that one, Melissa. I love the. I'm glad.
I was listening to it a lot as I was finishing my, as I was writing, editing the Wizard Rock section of the book and finishing the book. It was a huge like editing soundtrack along with a couple of other songs.
Oh, cool.
Really, really like uplifting. You know, gets you in the mood of this community.
Get you pumped.
Yeah, has like the right. I think it's really true. If you guys haven't heard the Harry and the Potter song called "These Days Are Dark," take a listen. It really kind of rings true to the scene, this forming of this. Mm-hmm. Of this army, this fighting back, this idea that through friendship and working together, that's how this is going to happen, which is really what it's all been about.
Yeah, well, we wrote that song after book 4.
Oh, really?
It was the last song on our first record. Yeah,
that's right.
And we tried to be forward thinking about like, well, it's kind of crummy. Voldemort's back from the dead, but could still tell that there was a lot of hope in the world, and it was just trying to illuminate that sort of thing, you know? Book 4 kind of has a not-so-great ending.
Yeah.
But we didn't want our album to end that way.
It's kind of blah, you know? Yeah. But, yeah. So it just shows how universal it all is, that it's coming into play in the fifth book and the fifth film.
Right.
When they have their first meeting.
Yes.
Right? Or is that in this portion, guys?
Well,
I believe so, the Hogsmeade meeting,
but
right?
Hermione decides, right, what was that dramatic moment? Boom, the rain, and they're like, ah.
Big thunderstorm.
There she is. We need someone who will teach us. And then that's Harry.
Well, it was nice to see Hermione, like, a little stumbling and afraid to speak in front of people. And,
yeah.
You know, nice to see her have some faults.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, be a little nervous. You wouldn't think she would be a good public speaker.
No. Well, you know, like in movie 2, she was like, fear of a name, and Chris's fear of the thing itself, right to Lucius Malfoy's face. Which, you know,
but
she's 12.
Endless self-confidence.
Yeah, but in terms of her character, she's really breaking the rules. I mean, you know, I mean, this is like, for someone who has been so fastidious along, I mean, even though she's really broken the rules before, this is something really counter the man, you know? I mean, this is something that's, you know, or counter the woman.
Paul is well versed.
You know?
Oh, yeah. That's definitely my favorite Hermione moment in all of the first 5 books, is when she totally helps Harry to start up the DA. I thought that was really her getting out of character and really doing what she thought was the best thing to do.
Yeah, that was nice.
And then we see the Hog's Head.
It's and there's the goat, John and the goat.
You know, it's just this legend of the goat thing. Every time he talks about it, it gets more funny and more tongue-in-cheek and more grossly aware of itself. So to see the movie people having fun.
Yes. Yes.
With Aberforth going after Bessie.
Yes. I mean.
Oh, man. Just hilarious. Movie 7 is going to be funny with that guy.
It is. I wonder if I'll have the same actor for it.
Love Aberforth.
You know, I don't know. Yeah, he's funny. But he turned out to be such a cool dude.
He was perfect.
He was the perfect antidote to Dumbledore. Mm-hmm. Anyway, what else about this section? In this section we have everybody starting to ask Harry about Cedric, and he gets all annoyed, and he backs down, and he starts telling them how it's different. And you have all these 15- and 16-year-old and 17-year-old kids and the one 11-year-old.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nigel.
The mystery child.
So strange.
So I think he's 12 now, right?
Yeah.
He's in the second year.
Yeah, it was the second year.
Nigel.
That's a little guy.
Well, he's sort of, I mean, they're not allowed to make anybody up, any character up. Warner Brothers, that right remains with J.K. Rowling.
Yeah.
So they needed, I guess, somebody smaller.
But who the hell was the guy in Azkaban that would talk about the ghost in his bare hands?
Well, he didn't have a name. That's the difference. They didn't. I mean, there's general characters, but if you're going to name somebody, that has to come from Joe.
But I liked our Colin. I wanted Colin Grevy. I liked our little photographer.
You know, they missed out on bringing Colin back because, as we know, in book 7.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
The actor who plays him is like 6'5".
He is. He's huge now.
But so are all like the Weasley twins. I mean, look at Dean Thomas. Yeah. Dean Thomas is a giant, you know?
I know, but he's in Harry's age. You can't have the little kid worshipping Harry be like 2 feet taller than him.
So what? Nobody's really going to remember, to be honest.
Well, then why do we care who it is then?
Because if it's Colin, it should be Colin. Colin's an actual member of the day. Maybe they just didn't want to cast him. Maybe he's, I don't know.
They would have made it Dennis.
More fun and cuddly.
Dennis.
He was holding out for big money.
Holding out for big money. His voice is on the video game, though.
Yeah.
He made him push it.
Creedies?
His actual voice, but he's not in the film anymore, so it's
just strange. But yeah, but I liked from just a film where, again, I have actually, it's my wallpaper right today, is the Village of Hogsmeade. They showed them that shot of the little village, the little model of, and I, so for me, I like that little thing that they bothered to shoot, that the little snow in the little village. It's cool. So we saw that. I thought that was pretty cool. Everybody sitting there, all their little cool hats, talking about. Did we see, like, Michael Corner or any of those dudes? Were they in there? Could we tell? The little Slytherin guy or whatever they called him?
Michael Corner, I think, was the guy with dark hair.
Was he?
I mean, I don't think they named him, but I think that if we have to pick somebody,
you know,
that's him.
That'd be a fair guess.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I think that'd be a fair guess.
What else is in this portion, guys?
I mean, that's mostly it. I think it was just cool seeing the DH guy for the first time.
Yeah.
I remember when we got that first promotional picture of all of them lined up.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
In a row. In the room of requirement. It's like, this is going to be cool. Cannot wait to see this. And then there they were. It's like the beginnings of making the team.
Yeah.
You know, I'm curious here. I'm looking at the listing for Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix on IMDb.
Mm-hmm.
And, oh, it's the video game. Okay. Because Colin's listed. He's listed in this, which is...
Yeah, it's the game. He's not in the movie.
Really, it's really strange. Okay, sorry. Oh, bring back Hugh Mitchell.
Yeah, bring
What's
him.
What's the matter?
Yeah,
is he not
we want
good
you.
Looking enough? What's going on here, people?
He's got like a full beard.
I mean, you know...
No, he does not.
You know?
There's a tiny little camera.
Come on.
That'd be awesome.
All right, so what's up next?
Hi, Harry.
What's next on Phoenix Files?
Coming up next week on Files of the Phoenix, we have the trio, plus three, affectionately known as the Sextet, I believe, are on the bridge, and they're excited about the meeting, and Hermione makes a joke about breaking rules, and then Neville finds the Room of Requirement, which is an exciting moment, and then they have their lesson, and then Filch and Umbridge are little hardy boys about it and trying to... figure out how to get in.
I love the Hardy Boys.
Oh, my. Guys, I just looked up Hugh Mitchell.
Yeah?
He's got a heavy metal T-shirt on. He's got an earring through his lip. He looks like, I don't know, like a grunge teen from the early 90s. Like, that, whoa, that's Colin Creevy? Wow.
That's cool.
We'll put the picture in the notes or something, because that, whoa. Talk about changing.
Wow, no wonder.
All right, good for him.
Maybe it was the hole in his lip. Maybe they couldn't get around that.
Oh.
But he's a good-looking guy. It's not like he got hit with the ugly stick or anything.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, like the guy that plays the Slytherin guy, Jamie Yates, is really one good-looking man. I mean, they made him look horrible in the movie. And he's really...
Who?
The guy, Slytherin keeper, the guy that flunked.
Oh, yeah, well, that's a teeth thing.
What?
Yeah, but he's really good-looking in real life. Just saying. Okay, I digress. Never mind. Ignore me.
Wow, he's like a rocker now. This is so strange. He's got a band.
Going to his MySpace?
He's a MySpace.
Yeah, The Craving.
The Craving.
This is cool.
Elf Ears
Wizard
and
Rock.
Bat Droppings.
He's in a Wizard Rock band? What?
No, it's just a band.
Oh,
but
no. Give me hope.
This is really strange. He's a total rocker now. Wow.
Yeah, cool. Almost,
that's awesome.
Wow. Okay, guys, Colin Creevy has gone goth.
He's a drummer. We need a drummer for our summer tour. You think Hugh Mitchell wants to... You think Colin Creevy wants to play drums?
Look at him.
Let's get him on the show.
Awesome.
That'd be a fun interview. What you up to these days?
What are you
dude?
Doing? Do some drums for us. This is crazy. He's got, like, hair down to his shoulders, wavy blonde hair.
Wow.
Who is this guy?
Anyway, another awesome edition of Phoenix Files.
Thanks, Paul,
right.
for joining us.
Oh, yeah.
All right, we'll see you guys.
My pleasure. Glad I could contribute a lot to that movie talk.
Sorry, Paul.
It's been a while since we've seen this movie. Not really, actually. I've seen like 11 times.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's why we watch it again before we record.
Every week.
Yeah, not so much.
Tune in.
Okay, so let's go. We'll see you guys at the drums.
Okay. Welcome to Scribby 5, the 5-minute podcast of the Leaky Cauldron's premier essay project, Scribulous. I'm Erin Arcalfios, and I have with me today Linda or Mosaic.
Hello.
And Laura or Music House.
Hi, guys. Today we're going to be talking about the essay, If the Author is Dead, Who's Updating Her Website? By Angwa, who is our Scribulous coordinator, Susan. The idea behind the essay is the popular literary theory idea that the author is dead, or another way to say that is that once the text is written and published, the author no longer has any say in the content or the interpretation of that content or anything else. And Rowling, as we all know, does not do this because she tells us what Harry and Ginny's future is like and some background information and all these things that are not actually in the book. So Laura, what did you think about this essay and about what Rowling does?
I think that I'm probably one of the few people out there that wishes she would have taken more time to give us time to read and interpret in our own way before she started talking about how Harry and Hermione and Ron grew up and what they did and all of that, because I really felt as though I didn't have much time to come up with my own theories before she started interviewing and telling us what she thought would happen to them.
You mean after Deathly Hallows came out?
Yeah, exactly. I just felt like it wasn't enough time for me, and I really didn't want to know certain things. I wanted to imagine it in my own way.
Yeah. I hear you. In some ways, I can see the other side of it, though, because nowadays authors are the ones who are expected to sell their books. The publishing houses don't do as much as they used to. So it's expected that authors go on talk shows and radio interviews and all that kind of thing that Rowling did to help sell the book. Not that Harry Potter really needs help being sold nowadays, but that is sort of expected of authors. So it is a fine line, though, of how much do you tell, how much do you keep hidden, and that sort of thing.
Well, and then for us, we sort of have to decide, you know, is this part of canon, what she says, or, you know, do we just ignore it and the end of the series is the end of her say at all? Like, can we even factor this in?
Right.
I don't know.
I think it's a good point, and I think Laura's reaction really highlights kind of what my big thought is, which is that, you know, people, when you make a statement about what's going to happen or you answer a question, you resolve a conflict, you're always going to disappoint one, at least, you know, one side, if not more. And it seems like she's taking a big chance, a big risk when she does that kind of stuff. You know, and she must
I'm sure she's just so excited about it, and in a lot of ways she just wants to share what she knows or what she thinks is going to happen with us. But at the same time, I kind of like it sometimes when things are open-ended, too.
Yeah, I agree with you. And also, taking it into a more critical perspective, which is where I sometimes come from, being a literature major in college, and I often write about books and interpret and think that, I think that Rowling often makes theorizing difficult nowadays because she does tell us so much, not just about the content, but about the interpretation of that content. Like when she discusses Remus as a werewolf, she says, you know, that can be interpreted as disabilities or illnesses and how we view people like that. But some people take the state of being a werewolf as being homosexuality or something a little more controversial and how we treat people like that. So when Rowling says, this is how you must read this, it sort of cuts off a lot of the theorizing that could potentially be done about her work.
Very true. I think right now this topic is really relevant, too, because since Deathly Hallows has come out, it's been just such a big, you know, topic of discussion with all the things she's come up with and all the tidbits of information she's given us. And so, you know, this essay, even though it's back in issue 9 and was written before Deathly Hallows, is still, you know, really valuable right now. One of the things that Susan did in the essay that I thought was particularly good for me was she took a lot of the things that Jo has said about what she would like, how she would like her work to be read, and what she would consider, you know, like a good achievement or whatever out of her own work, and she kind of condensed it into one sentence right at the conclusion of the essay. She said, from J.K. Rowling's perspective, her books will be a success if they are entertaining and funny stories, moral but not preachy, with a meticulously well-crafted, surprising plot, and interesting characters who grew up in a realistic way. And for me, she surely did those things. And I think, you know, it's if you want to go back and read the essay, it'll be cool. You know, it could help you decide, you know, how much more information you think Jo should divulge or, you know, whatever. And it is back, like I said, in issue 9 of Scribulous, and it's on our website, which is www.scribulous.com. as part of the leakycauldron.org. And that's it for this Scribby 5. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll talk to you again next week.
Bye.
Bye, everyone.
Bye, guys.
Thanks, Paul, for coming back.
Oh, yeah, thanks for having me. It's always a pleasure.
Thanks, Paulie.
Sorry we haven't done any more PSAs for you guys. Maybe someday.
What the heck?
Oh, I know. What the hell?
Yeah, those were fun.
They're the best.
And the last one got huge play all over the internet.
Yeah, well, you posted it on your front page, didn't you?
Yeah, pretty much.
I added it up on our MySpace, too.
Yeah, your MySpace is no joke either.
Yeah.
So
I think we should play the Otter Cat.
Oh, yeah.
Otter Cat.
The ending
Loopy
jingle.
Loopy Cat. Loopy yeah. Rat. It's an anti-jingle. It's like
an anti-jingle.
It is. It's like...
It's like the zombie attack at the end. Yeah.
I know. We all put bolts in our neck and walk out with our arms in front of us.
Otter Cat.
Shaun of the Dead.
Eat frames.
Frames are yummy. So I am listening to Colin Gravy's music right now.
Yeah? You can hear us?
It's crazy. Yeah, I can hear you. It's
link in the show
notes. It's pretty loud. It's extreme.
They have, like, environmental... messages and stuff. Be sure I'm on the EP club, Paul.
Oh,
that'd be awesome.
Forget it. I'm gonna ask Creevy to play drums as long as he doesn't take photos of us while he's playing. Cool. That's Colin Creevy on the drums. For real, guys. Colin Creevy. Check him out.
Nobody would believe you either because he looks so different. They'd be like, yeah, whatever. Yeah, just like you're Harry Potter. Ha ha.
Yeah. It's funny. It's funny when you guys are talking about like all the other Order of the Phoenix characters like Dean Thomas and Michael Corner, like all of Ginny's ex-boyfriends, I started to get like really jealous, which makes me think like I've been too close to Harry for some time now, where I'm like
doing it a little too
yeah fun. I'm like, you guys just mentioned those guys and it's like, oh, those guys are jerks.
Aw, well, it's all right. It worked out for Harry in the end, so.
Yeah.
And they were good. They came back and helped.
Yeah.
All right, well, we are going to have many, many, many more updates. I'm going to go comment on Charles Grievous. We're going to put a link in here, and I feel bad because he's going to get all about... Maybe he's trying to shed his Harry Potter origin. We just brought it back.
That'll be awesome.
Crashing down on him. He looks like he's not too willing to associate with the Harry Potter stuff these days. But, no, I heard from the video game guys that he was really a pleasure to work with and was really, really happy and nice. So, so his music is emo. He's very emo.
We're going to totally do some rocking out when we're done.
Very cool. I have one note I'd like to say. This is kind of random, but last week we talked about March from Maryland when we were talking about stuff in the game.
Marge.
It's Margie, not Marge. Her name is Margie. Yes.
Did she email you?
Yes. So.
Oh my gosh, no kidding.
Hi, Margie.
Margie, we love your cake. We use it all the time on Leaky.
That picture is the best thing ever.
Without permission.
John made that post on my birthday, and I was so sad because he didn't know how to do the icon thing, and he didn't have Marge and Marilyn's cake up there.
That's right.
So I was so sad. I was like, John, do you mind if I edit it and I go put in the Marge and Marilyn cake? I mean,
come on. It's not a Leaky birthday with all that.
Margie, thank you so much. We'd love to have you on talk about cakes. We love all the people. Oh, too, we got a really fun cake email. Someone sent us in their cakes, and we love Potter people and their cakes.
We've had a lot of cake interviews on
the
show.
Did you guys get emailed cakes or actual cakes? What happened?
What's that?
What happened?
Huh?
Say it again?
I said, did somebody email you a cake, or did you get an actual cake?
Pictures.
You guys should try and get some actual cakes out of the deal.
I know. And then a listener...
We've gotten quite a few baked goods over the years.
A listener named Brittany sent us pictures of all the Hogwarts trains that she sculpted out of gingerbread and Hagrid and all these things. It's amazing.
Darling.
Some of you guys do.
Somebody made us cakes in Chicago, if you remember.
They did. They were
delicious house colored cakes.
Which was a great thing to have at the end of the day once... You know, on our first day of tour.
I think I knocked out most of yours. And
you did. And all of Sue's.
All of Sue's.
Mine never got to have any.
No, John ate it.
It wouldn't have survived the melt.
You know, it's so weird because it's so funny. My favorite cakes are lemon cakes, and so for my birthday, I always have it. And it's lemon, yellow, Hufflepuff. There you go. It was meant to be.
Well, it wasn't. I don't think it was lemon.
It was red velvet cake.
Yeah, it was. It had yellow icing, though.
Oh, thank you. Yes, ooh, that's very festive.
Yeah. And then remember we did that interview with the girl who made the DH cake?
Yes, that's right, for Deathly Hallows. That's right, she did. That's right.
What is up with these cakes?
I tell you what, Potter people, man.
We're
talking
about 136
episodes in, you know. Gotta keep talking.
I know. Seriously. We're always talking. You're always listening. We're Potter Captain. Potter Captain.
Hey, man. If Joe can have food in her books all over the place, then so can we on Potter Captain.
Yeah. Yeah, I want to talk to the girl who made the Hogwarts out of toothpicks. There's a girl that we met at Phoenix Rising. We haven't talked to her next. So, one day, soon. All right, people.
Well,
plenty of
tune
stuff.
In next week.
Yeah, tune in next week. We have plenty of leaking updates coming soon.
Oh,
that's
awesome. Something fun.
Fun stuff on the way for you.
Guys, thanks for having me on. Thanks for helping.
Thank you, Paul.
Thanks for pimping the EP Club. Everybody listening should go check it out at wizardrockclub.com.
Wizardrockclub.com.
Heck yeah.
I can't wait. My favorite part of the subscription is that Paul, whoever he knows, he draws stuff on the back of their envelopes.
Oh, don't say that. Now everybody's going to feel let down. I'm not even... Matt's still in the orders this year, so...
Oh, okay, I don't know. I feel bad. I'm going to get you in trouble. Take that out, please.
If yours is blank, you can quit life.
Yeah.
Paul doesn't like you.
Blank bad. Whoops, I didn't even think about that, to be honest. Okay, well...
Keep twiddling those dials, guys.
The next password will be donuts.
Keep each other safe.
Keep faith.
Good night.
Toby is free.
Oh, and about time, too.
We've missed it.
I confess myself disappointed.
Now, if you two don't mind, I'm going to bed.
Great, Scott. No wonder. Look at the time. We've been here nearly 4 hours. Spooky how the time flies when one's having fun.